critical incidents, provider stress, and the Orlando active shooter incident with critical incident stress expert Dan McGuire from CISM Perspectives. If that's what you're looking for, guess what? You found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to say hey and welcome you to this week's show. This week's show, we've got a great episode. We're going to be talking about the very real trauma suffered by all the providers, the responders, and others in and out of the hospitals down there in Orlando when encountering things like the nightclub shooting there. We have critical incident stress expert Dan McGuire from CISM Perspectives here on the show. He's going to be talking about the advice he's been giving the hospital staff down there, as well as the responders, for this Orlando nightclub shooting that happened last week. Check out part one of that two-part episode in this special MedicCast episode coming up here after the introductions. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you do a couple of things. There's going to be links to Dan's site as well as other information available for you over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link and scroll down there to find previous links and other episodes. There are also search boxes on the site, so if you're looking for something in particular, you can do that. But take some time and make sure you follow up on the information you hear me talk about in the show each week so you understand how you can apply it to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you still want to get back in touch with me, you've looked for stuff and can't find it, or you just want to say hey, check in with me by email at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments and questions on the show, or you can send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well, so please keep those emails coming. That's it for our contact information. Let's go ahead and get on into the rest of the show. It's coming right up in just a sec. In this upcoming segment with Dan McGuire from CISM Perspectives, I talk with Dan to get his input about the very real stresses and more being suffered by all the responders, as well as the staff at Orlando Regional Medical Center down in Orlando, who dealt with all the patients and the dead during and after the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Now, this is a two-part, audio-only episode that has Dan sharing the advice he's given me from what he talked about with the Orlando Regional Medical Center human resources staff and others. So check it out and stay tuned for part two of this excellent interview. That's coming up next week. Hi, Dan. It's been a long time since you and I have chatted. I think the last time we talked, we were on a show together with Rick Rosati when he was still doing the Mitigation Journal podcast back probably 4 or 5 years ago at least.
Yes, it's been way too long, and it's great to be part of the show again, and a lot of important topics that are really glaring in everybody's minds right now.
Yeah, especially, and just to let everybody know, Dan and I actually had set up to record this months ago and just hadn't been able to connect, so this was the first time we were able to set up an opening, and it just so happened that this recording date is just a few days after the Orlando shooting, the nightclub shooting that happened in Orlando. That's still fresh in our minds, and we're going to actually go with that topic because I think it's important to discuss not just what happens to first responders in these types of situations, but there are other types of individuals that are involved with these mass incidents that have to deal with the traumatic situations that they've dealt with after the fact. And most specifically, I'm talking about Orlando Regional Medical Center's trauma team and ER staff that were just inundated with walk-in patients. Dan, before we get to that, though, real quickly, just tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your company.
Well, Dan McGuire here in Rochester, New York, native of the general area. name of my company is CISM Perspectives Incorporated, and we're in our 18th year of business. And started out primarily doing CISM training programs, basic and advanced training, acute traumatic stress management program as well. And then I became very interested and saw a great need for the helping agencies get over the scare or the inability to even talk about line of duty deaths happening in their agencies. And since I've experienced that twice in my 25 years in EMS, that's a very big part of our company. We work with all emergency responders, fire, EMS, law enforcement especially. And I sort of push the topic onto them for their own good. And once they realize that, we've got all kinds of plans in place. And when I ask them, what was the last time that was updated, or does anybody even know where that manual is? There's always that blank stare. So that's been a big part of the business, very successful at it. Written a couple of textbooks on it, and actually produced a 4-part video that's being used down at the Fire Academy right now. So, and right now, another big topic that I'm working on is the responder, especially fire and EMS suicide rates that are just really higher than we ever imagined before. So that is something new that we're working on now to release a couple of programs. And I was a past chief in EMS for 4 years and absolutely lived, breathed everything EMS as a volunteer, proud to be a volunteer. And unfortunately, after 2 back surgeries, it took me off the road. So I just gave me all that more energy to put into the business and to really just get out there and get people to start thinking about topics that they're sort of afraid to even open up about, taking care of themselves, traumatic stress. How do we set up a peer support team? I've helped many, many agencies, including 3 hospitals, which is in particular with the topic of Orlando, helped 3 hospitals set up a peer or crisis response team. And, so I've been branching out a little bit, and I'm very lucky to have the job that I do. And I it feels like I don't work a day in my life because I just really enjoy it to the maximum.
Yeah, I have to say I feel the same way about what I do. I feel very connected to the people that I talk to in the podcast each week that this goes out to, each and every member of that audience. I feel very connected with and hopefully am able to serve them in some way that I couldn't have done if I was still a nurse in the ER or a paramedic provider actively working on the street. So,
right.
So let's talk a little bit about Orlando. And everybody should be aware of that by now and knows what happened. The situation was just devastating in so many ways to the police that have to deal with the response, to the EMS providers that were called to the scene, that had to deal with the injured and also confirming the dead after the situation had resolved. But what really floored the hospital teams were that they were just 2 blocks away.
Exactly.
And so, you know, if you've seen the footage of individual nightclub attendees, or groups of nightclub attendees carrying or supporting a gunshot wound victim two blocks down the road to walk into the ER. And so I watched the entire Orlando Regional Medical Center press conference yesterday where they interviewed the doctors, the nurses, and that were on the trauma team and in the ER. And I was struck by the way this situation set up, and I'm just going to kind of go over it because you may not have caught the press conference and heard their description of what happened. They got a call for several gunshot wound victims that they should be prepared. They're a level one trauma center in Orlando. They said, oh, we're going to get one or two gunshot wound victims from a nightclub shooting. They thought nothing more of it. This is something they deal with. They're a major metropolitan area. They get gunshot wound victims, usually handguns.
Right.
They're expecting, you know, relatively low velocity bullet wounds, and just a couple of victims. One or two people come in, and before they knew it, within minutes, they had five critically injured patients in the trauma bay, and they had up to 10 to 15 other patients lined up in the hallway outside the ER.
And what struck me was the patients were literally being put in the back of some type of emergency services pickup trucks, mm-hmm. and just literally drive them two blocks and dropping them. And so they were just completely overwhelmed by that. One thing to add to my background, I did work at one of our trauma centers here for 5 years. And so I have a bit of an insight of what chaos can be like on a Friday or Saturday night, but nothing like this. And it is just a incredible job of what they were able to do and to keep their head in the game and do everything that they had to do. One other group that I do want to mention that also was very much part of this response was actually the 911 center people.
Yes.
They were the very first ones to get the barrage of the hundreds of phone calls and cell phone calls. And
calls from the killer himself.
Yeah, and taking that call while you're in a 911 call center, how do you keep your head in the game when you're hearing this guy saying, "I'm doing this for a known terrorist organization," and then speaking in Arabic and then all the rest of the calls, and those people in that call center are the first line heroes of this whole event, because you know, you had your fire dispatchers, EMS dispatchers, police dispatchers. I'm sure they probably brought in backup people. I worked with our local 911 center and helped them set up their own internal peer support group, and I certainly hope that call center in Orlando certainly has some type of internal peer support CISM team, because they got hit first, and then the rest of us was just one after another of all the emergency responders, and then the hospital was just the end point of everybody was shoving everything that they had to the hospital.
Yeah. And so in some ways, these patients were incredibly lucky to have a level one trauma center two blocks away. They were able to get there in rapid time frame and get examined very quickly. You know, they brought down the available on call trauma surgeons. They called in all their staff that they had out, all the physicians, all the nurses that were available, came directly to the center within the hour of notification. And so they mobilized their resources. I heard one doctor say, you know, when asked about what he thought when he looked back at this event, and he said, "It was the worst day of my life, and it was the best day of my life." And would you like to speak to how that juxtaposition of two seemingly opposite things can happen?
Yeah, and I saw a portion of that the press conference, and hearing those surgeons and nurses and everybody else just speak very directly and very calmly about all of these, what I call imprints of horror, that were being dumped in their laps. And we define imprints of horrors of the sights, sounds, smells that you experience while you're working in the emergency services. So these, anybody who is in that ED and up in the OR suites, and you know, that they were being, their minds were being bombarded by these imprints of horror, but yet they had to keep their game face on, because like you and I know, when we're in the field, no matter what is in front of us, as bad as it looks and as it may even affect us directly and potentially personalize the event for us, we still have a job to do, and a job that's expected to be done and done to perfection. So in knowing that this, just two blocks away, there was somebody that was armed with military-grade weaponry, and you know, there was at one point a report that the shooter was now in the ED, and that, of course, just made their job all the more difficult to do. But luckily, and divine intervention, that that was not true. But I think what that surgeon said is exactly it. It was the worst day of my life because of all the carnage and the just the damage to these innocent people who were there to just simply be out, be with their friends, having a good time, and then seconds later, it turns into a killing field. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it was. And one other thing that I heard from another report was when that first entry team went in, you know, they were stepping over dying bodies, and they were hearing all these cell phones ringing.
Yes.
But they had to ignore that and neutralize that shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just everybody, when they hear these stories, just further loads on top of them that traumatic impact. But again, we've got to bite down and keep doing our job. And I think that's because we were able, they were able to do exactly that, regardless of what was in front of them, knowing that two blocks away there is a active shooter. They still kept their head in the game, did what they had to do, saved lives, comforted those who unfortunately lost loved ones, and got those OR suites opened up and blood donors lined up. And, you know, they just were in this, what I call an autopilot mode.
Right.
You don't think, you just simply do. And in the CISM program, there's a term that I use called the letdown phase. And that's exactly what I think while these people were being interviewed, is they were just entering that letdown phase.
Yeah.
Even though it was still 2 days after all the activities, because they finally had a chance to sort of pull the throttles back to idle and just start to metabolize and absorb, what did I hear, see, touch, things that they've never seen before that exceeded their past experiences, which makes that traumatic impact all the more powerful and deeper in breadth and depth. So once they're in that letdown phase, that can be a very critical point in how that person is going to either, and this is another thing that we use in CISM teaching, is am I just going to survive this event, or is there a way I can use skills and assistance to thrive from this event.
Right.
And I think that going back to your original statement where that doctor said, you know, the worst day but the best day, they performed as good as anyone could. It was like they were in the middle of a battlefield.
Right. And it's interesting because it was such a prolonged event. And they talked about how they got the initial 20 or so victims in that were walk-in gunshot wound victims. And then there was a lull as the three-hour standoff happened. And then they had the final incident where the shooter was taken down. And then they got into the rest of the 20 or so, other 20, 24 victims came in suddenly, and they had the brief lull in between, and then they were back slammed again. Luckily, they still had the staff on hand and were able to pick up. But you're right. I think that this was an opportunity for them to realize all the things they had trained to do and to say, and hopefully, I think, to say to themselves, I did the best I could. And I think that's an important thing for someone to arrive at in a situation like this. And could you speak a little bit about that? Because there's that guilt of, could I have done better? Did I make a mistake? And that can really weigh on someone and really bring the stresses back into their lives again and again.
It'll bring the traumatic stress back to them full force. I was called by the hospital yesterday for some advice, and when I was speaking to one of the human resources people, she also reported that there were some employees, because there was a lockdown period, that employees who wanted to come in to help couldn't, because they couldn't even get in even close to the hospital. So, you know, there's an intensive amount of responsibility guilt right there that, you know, I could not do my job. But then going back to the people who were right there in the throes of everything, sure, they're going to question, did I do everything that I could? And that's, I think, a natural thing that anyone who's in the emergency services a career field, we're always questioning ourselves on that because we're such perfectionists, and that's what our training demands that right. from us, to be right all the time. And if we do something wrong and somebody does not survive because of that, I mean, that's a catastrophic career-ending event right there. So going back to your original point, again, once these people had that day and a half, 2 days to be out of that environment, go home and sort of start to get back to the routine, which is actually one thing that we encouraged, try to get back to your routines and routine day-to-day processes to help metabolize the critical incident stress. But realizing, finally having a chance to really think and, as I said, really digest, what did I just do? What did I just experience? And for a lot of those people, this was far and above what they may have ever experienced before. Yeah, even though they're a level one trauma center, yes, they get their gunshot wounds and stab wounds and MBAs and so forth, but not a terrorist attack two blocks down from where I'm trying to save somebody's life, or I'm trying to bandage somebody up, or I'm trying to do a death notification to one of the loved ones. You know, when you start stacking all of this, these pictures and these sounds and all of the things that were going on around you, and once you enter that let down phase, that's when everything starts to come back crashing in. Mm-hmm. And that's where we start to look at, okay, what did I do right? What could have I done better? That's where some of that responsibility guilt comes in. Probably some survivor's guilt as well, because I'm alive, yet 50-some people were not. And, you know, and some were not salvageable when they came through those
doors. They lost 9 patients of the 44 that were brought in.
And that is going to, I know from my own past experiences in the field, is when you lose a patient, especially with trauma, you know, and you work and you throw everything you've got at them, and when you're in an OR suite with a trauma surgeon standing over you, having to call it has got to have a defeating, overwhelming defeating feeling that could we have seen gotten this patient 4 minutes earlier, 5 minutes earlier, and we may have been able to save
and
them.
And the lead trauma surgeon said that, made the comment that, I mean, they were, you know, just like we would do mass casualty triage as an EMS provider on the in the field, and have to categorize patients and make life and death decisions for some of them. They ended up doing that in the hospital, which is not usually the place that you think of making those types of decisions. And the surgeon said that we had to make a determination whether we could save this patient or not. And if we could not save that patient, could we keep them comfortable? Which leads you to believe that they weren't dead yet.
So
they had to make a decision with the resources we have. We can't save this person right now. Can we make them comfortable for the end of their life while we move on to someone else? And that is completely opposite to anything that anybody that's in the healthcare professions can think of doing.
And I actually experienced that once. One of my last very calls in EMS, that we had a horrible car accident, and we just literally had a triage. This one is too far gone. This one's too far gone. This one's going to go by air ambulance. You know, having to make those godlike decisions, as I've heard that word used many times so far, that puts an enormous amount of responsibility into the lap of that person that has to stand up and say, okay, we cannot save this one, but let's at least give them all the comfort that we possibly can for a peaceful, respectable death. But how do you explain that to the families that we couldn't get your loved one up to the OR because there is just too much damage? And having to try to explain that to John Q. Citizen or the family members, that is just a whole nother secondary traumatization, a secondary trauma event that they have to go through, because they've got to come out and tell those family members, yes, your loved one is alive, or I'm sorry, we did everything we could. And there is no easy way to do a death notification, whether you're a trauma surgeon or if you're a EMT or a paramedic or a firefighter. Yeah. It's one of the hardest things to do. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of good training out there for that.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/medicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.